It's a very, very special evening, and we are delighted that so many of you chose to join us in honoring Geetaji Iyengar, who has touched us so, so deeply, and through touching us has touched everybody in this room. And by touching everybody in this room, those of you around you, your children, your parents, your friends, you know, it's remarkable how when somebody has touched and moved you so deeply, that bhavana, that feeling, you know, spreads everywhere. How many of you have taken an Iyengar yoga class before? So I think most of us recognize that at the beginning of class, we begin with the invocation to Patanjali. And in fact, Guruji BKS Iyengar never intended to call his system Iyengar yoga. He called it Patanjali yoga. It is we who chose to call it Iyengar yoga. And in choosing to call it Patanjali yoga, he recognized the influence of Patanjali and the yoga sutras of Patanjali. When you walked in, what we were chanting was the first pada, the first chapter of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. The English translation of that, Guruji's version of that, is in your program notes. So when you go home, this can be an introduction for you of the Yoga Sutras, of the first pada of the Yoga Sutras. This is kind of the foundational material that we as teachers study. So as we begin this evening, it's appropriate that we all begin with the invocation to Patanjali. We'll take a call and response. Eric? Call and response? Or I think we'll do it all together. I think everybody knows it. Yeah. We'll all do it together. There's enough of us who are familiar with it. Okay, so
okay,
let's begin with three ohms. Okay, I want you to hold the mic. Been blessed to have known such remarkable people who've dedicated their entire life. From an early age, both Guruji and Geetaji were surrounded, walked in the footsteps of Patanjali's teaching. Most of us are familiar with Guruji. Many of us are not as familiar with Geetaji. Whereas Guruji was very outgoing, Geetaji was very humble. So I'd like to give you a little bit of an introduction to Geetaji. For many of us, this evening is very bittersweet. You know, we have spent hours at the feet of our teachers. And while we come together to celebrate the light and the life and the gifts that Geetaji gave us, many of us also realize we will never see her again. For some of us, when we were introduced to yoga at a younger age, she guided our life. In your 20s, in your 30s, you don't quite know where you are in life. And she gave us a set of values. She gave us a path. She was really like that good mother. And going back to India was always a pilgrimage. There are some people here tonight who were fortunate enough to have been in Pune this last December. And her teaching, up until the end, was phenomenal. Now, even when her body was pained and crippled, as soon as she was seated and she donned the light of yoga, she was yoga. And any of you who sat at her feet know that. This evening we'll hear from several teachers who knew her in a personal way, who worked with her professionally, who apprenticed with her. You know, so we'll get a picture of the woman, of the career woman, of the teacher. And that's very special for us. She was very humble. And in her humility, she was always kind of pretending like she was in her father's shadow. At Guruji's 80th birthday, it was held during the time of her birthday. Her birthday is December 7th. And Guruji had intended to bring out a cake for her to celebrate. And to the very end, some of you were there, to the very end, she said, no, it's not my, I don't want to celebrate my birthday. It's not about me, it's about you, Father Guruji. She's very, very humble. Gita was the firstborn. And any of you who are firstborn know what that means. She was the firstborn of five children, born in 1944. She was ill. At the age of 9, she was diagnosed with nephritis. And the doctors prescribed a lot of medication for her. Her family was very poor at the time, and her father told her, you must do yoga because I can't afford medicine. And she practiced. She practiced and she healed. But her health was a struggle throughout her entire life. She earned her doctorate degree in Ayurveda and supervised, along with her father, the medical classes in Pune. I think because of her own physical struggles, she was incredibly empathetic to the struggles and afflictions of others. So while she would create sequences, she would adapt sequences, she would see people's needs, she would address their needs, she really was the epitome of the caring mother to all of her students. She first came to the US in 1996, where she taught a teachers' convention in Colorado, in Estes Park. She came back again in Pasadena. I remember going to Pasadena, this is 2001, and on the marquee, in big letters, was Iyengar Yoga. It was like, wow, 2001, before the yoga wave. We've made it, you know. It was really quite impressive. In 2007, she came to Las Vegas, and in 2010, she led a therapeutics convention in Portland. At the end of this evening, or sometime during the following week, take a moment to look at the lobby outside that Scott has prepared for you. There's notes, pictures of Gita's conventions and of her past. Many of you are familiar with the standards of Iyengar Yoga teachers. Gita, along with her father, Gita was the pragmatist. She was very methodical, and she was responsible for putting together the certification process. Her father oversaw it, but she was the nuts and bolts behind it. To help back up the training of teachers, she wrote basic guidelines, the preliminary course, the intermediate course, that are guidebooks for all of us who study and become Iyengar Yoga teachers. She had high standards for her teachers and insisted, and you'll all be appreciative of this, insisted on clear demonstrations, the importance of voice and clarity in language, precision, observation skills, and understanding how to sequence poses effectively. These are the hallmarks of Iyengar Yoga. And they say that imitation is a form of flattery. Well, many other forms of yoga have kind of followed suit. Okay. What she said in basic guidelines is, a teacher has to learn how to cultivate persistence in the students, build up their willpower, and also import the knowledge of where to focus and how much effort is appropriate. Gita never married. Her mother died in 1973 when she was 29. She assumed the household. No, so she had to then take care of her four siblings. She oversaw the management and the direction of the institute. And to be a woman in India means overseeing the kitchen, overseeing every aspect of the household. And as a dutiful firstborn daughter, she did that with so much grace. And everybody who worked there was really delighted to work there. Finally, and you'll hear more about this in a few moments, Gita's contributions to women's health, from the phases of a woman's menstrual cycle, to pregnancy, to menopause, these are things that in 1990 women couldn't talk about. You know, these were things that were not mainstream. I think now people are much more receptive to the needs of a woman. So when she wrote Yoga, A Gem for Women, it was really the equivalent of a Bible, a yoga Bible for women, equal to Light on Yoga. Okay. So with that, I'd just like to say that Gita's life was one of service, and I'd like to end this little biography with a quote of hers. Yoga is meant for everyone. Nobody is excluded from it, whether they are men, women, or children, elderly or aged people, diseased or disabled, the path of yoga is open to everyone. However, you have to practice according to your physical, mental, and spiritual capacity. Yoga is meant to give us a way to discover or rediscover ourselves. It teaches us how to find the great margin of maximum capacity that we have inside, so that we are able to expose ourselves to ourselves